Right. So
Let's call this meeting to order and we'll start with the flag salute.
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Good evening, Laura. May we have a roll call, please?
Good evening, Director Sesenia,
I'm here.
Director Fourcroy,
Here.
Director Gatchell, Vice President Womack,
Present.
President Ohelski.
Absent. Okay, and so announcement of closed session items, public employment, district legal counsel review. Oh, Marshall's here.
Let the record reflect.
Do we open up for public comment, or is that over when we come out?
We do it now.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, let's open this item for public comment.
There is no public comment online.
And none in the boardroom. All right. We'll adjourn to closed session.
Excuse me. So this is the regular meeting of the Board of Directors of the Los Osos Community Service District. We adjourned to closed session and we're now at item number four, reconvene to open session. Running a little bit behind. So those of you that are interested in the results of closed session, we have nothing to report at this time. After the open session is done, we're going back into closed session. So we're going to go back into closed session after open session is done. So with that, then we'll move on to item number six, which are the public safety reports. First of all, there's 6A, the fire department report. Oh, do we have any report at all?
We did distribute a report,
The written report.
the written report.
Do you want to sum it up or should I?
Boy, I'm not
Okay,
prepared at
those of
this
you who are
point.
interested in that, there's a written report that you'll have to refer to. Then the second one is 6B, which is the Sheriff's Department report, which I see in attendance.
Hello.
Good evening, members of the board, staff, members of the public. For the month of October in Los Osos, the sheriff's office responded to six assault and battery reports. That was four battery reports and two domestic violence related reports. There were 19 disturbances, including 12 general disturbances, two family disputes, two fight calls, two loud music complaints, and one neighbor dispute. We had one residential burglary reported to us in October, and eight thefts. Six of those were petty thefts, so a value lost under $950, and two grand thefts, with the value being over $950. There were three vandalisms reported. One was vandalism to a vehicle. One was vandalism to plants in somebody's yard, and the third was vandalism to a political sign. We had one phone scam or scam reported to us. It was an attempted computer scam. That was the one where your computer screen freezes and a message comes up. With a telephone number to call for services to help clear your computer. That telephone number is taking you to people who will scam you for money. So if you get that, close your computer down, restart it. If you're still having issues with the computer, take it to a reputable computer repair shop for help. Do not call the number that purports to be some reputable manufacturer that's offering to help you. because that is how they get into your wallet. There were 19 suspicious circumstance calls. 9 of those were suspicious circumstances, 8 suspicious persons, and 2 suspicious vehicles. The deputies working in the Los Osos area conducted 65 enforcement stops, which included 54 vehicle stops, 6 pedestrian stops, and 5 bicycle stops. They also engaged in 51 preventative patrol activities, which included 29 on-site activities, 9 parked vehicle checks, 7 foot patrols, 4 patrol checks, and 2 extra patrols. That concludes my report, and I'm available for any questions or concerns.
Thank you. Does anybody have a question? Yeah, Chuck?
I do. I had something kind of disturbing happen this month, and I called dispatch, and we played phone tag for a little bit. I haven't really talked to anybody yet, but to me, it was potentially serious. I went to my mailbox one day, had 2 letters from one of my credit card companies. One of them had a credit card in it, and the other one had 4 credit cards in it, all with the same account number, my account number and my 3-digit PIN. I called the credit card company asking why they sent me 4 extra cards, and they replied that all 5 were sent in response to my online request for additional card members added to my account. So someone hacked the computer, but then had the card sent to my local, my mailbox. So were they waiting down the street hoping to grab the cards, all 5 different names? I didn't even know that until I talked to the credit card company, yeah. And they ran through the list of names, none of which I recognized.
Interesting. They may have been hoping to intercept it prior to delivery. But yes, did you?
It just seems complicated.
Close that account out.
I changed everything about access to it, including added layers. But it just seemed odd, one, to get hacked, and then to have the cards delivered to a mailbox. That
generally they would have
sent somewhere else,
sent to a totally new address.
Okay. So that's not a common thing you hear about.
That was an incompleted effort that likely had they gotten successful. If they successfully changed the address, you would not have known until you got your next bill that they were making charges.
Well, I guess it troubles me that I've got a local hacker that's that good and has the time to sit around and look at my mailbox.
Yeah, it's
unusual.
It's probable that that person is not inside this community. The person was out from some other place, and they just
guest on delivery day, maybe.
Well, they weren't able to redirect the.
In the first
the mail.
Place.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else have anything? Okay. Seeing none. Thank you for your report.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah. You too. Do we have Highway Patrol? Yes,
Highway Patrol's online.
Oh, okay. So Highway Patrol, Laura.
Yeah. Good evening, Lieutenant Tim Santoro with the Highway Patrol. For the last month, we had 6 crashes that we investigated out there. They were broken down with 2 DUI-related collisions where both the suspected drunk drivers were arrested. We had 1 misdemeanor hit-and-run crash and 3 non-injury collisions that we investigated. There was no DUI arrests other than the ones that were involved in the crashes. So that is the end of my report, and I'm open for any questions.
Okay, anybody have any questions for the CHP? No, thank you very, very much for your service to our community.
Thank you.
All right.
Shall we take public comment?
I will take public comment, yes.
If you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come to the podium. There is none online.
I have none here either, Laura. Okay, so we're going to move on to item number 7, the general action items. The first item is 7A, which is to receive a presentation regarding Waste Connections proposed solid waste rate increase analysis and direct staff to set the date of January 9th, 2025 for a public hearing to consider adopting the new solid waste rates. The recommendation is tentative support of the solid waste rates, direct staff to set the date for the public hearing and support new rate setting methodology. Excuse me. So, Ron, I'll turn that over to you.
Thank you very much. And we do have Garth Schultz from R3 Consulting here to help tonight. I just have a few introductory comments, and then I'm going to turn it over to Garth. Just a little bit of background. As you know, our solid waste franchise agreement was transferred back to the district in April 2022. During that period, the Waste Connections, or Mission Country Disposal, who is a subsidiary of Waste Connections, had submitted a rate application to the county in October of 2021. So the county took lead on adopting that base year application. The result was a 41.87% increase with a temporary retroactive increase of 55.74%. You know, from this, it's been known for a bit, and I think Garth will touch on this a little bit, that the 1994 rate setting methodology is old and in need of revision. So the city of San Luis Obispo and the district engaged R3 Consulting Group to develop a new rate setting methodology. The other eight agencies that Waste Connection serves in, you know, the North Coast, San Luis Obispo, and South County areas joined in the effort in May. We engaged R3 in February, I think it was, this year. In May, the other eight agencies joined the effort. But during this time, and per the current rate setting methodology, Mission Country Disposal did submit a base year application using the current rate setting. So this kind of led to two different things. We were going to review the rate application at the same time of developing the new rate setting methodology. So tonight, R3 will be providing a review of the 2025 Mission Country Disposal application, an analysis of the new recommended rates, which include elements of the proposed new rate setting methodology, and then provide details on what's actually in the new proposed rate setting methodology. So as Marshall just mentioned, keep in mind that what we're looking for from the board tonight. I did notice that there was a typo in the where the meeting date or the hearing, public hearing date of January 9th. So I want to emphasize that it is on January 9th. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Garth.
Garth, before you start, could you maybe just give us a little background about R3 Consulting Group?
Yes.
So everybody understands.
Absolutely happy to. And in fact, that is my intended first okay. pitch here.
Thank you.
So I'm Garth Schultz. I'm president with R3 Consulting Group. I have a 20-year history in solid waste and recycling, starting as a truck driver when I was in my teens and moving up through local government. I worked for local government for 8 years and have been doing consulting to local governments now for 10 years with R3. We're a boutique firm. We work only for local government agencies throughout the state of California. We've got roughly 150 clients at any given time, cities, towns, special districts, joint powers authorities, and counties. We don't work for Waste Connections or for any solid waste haulers themselves, but we do work in collaboration with them on what ultimately are these public-private partnerships that are your solid waste and sanitation utilities. So that's me, and that's my background. Very happy to be here, and thanks for having me. Next slide. So to start off, I think it's just helpful to contextualize what we're talking about when we talk about solid waste rates. So first off, I just mentioned solid waste and sanitation being a utility, and it is an important public utility. It's not one that is commonly provided by local government entities in California at this time. It's generally contracted with a private entity like Waste Connections, but it is a critical element of meeting health and safety requirements under state code and regulations, namely making sure that we don't accumulate trash and garbage and on our properties and parcels and create vectors and things like that. So for provision of that sanitation utility, you as the district and many other agencies here in the county contract out with Waste Connections, and your local branch of Waste Connections is Mission Country Disposal. In that agreement with Mission Country Disposal, there is a provision for annual adjustments to the rates that you authorize as a district and that they bill directly to residents and businesses and other customers, generators of solid waste. In that methodology presently, as it exists today, It's an every 3-year cost-based rate adjustment where someone like me comes in and reviews an application from the company that's based on their actual costs, and I'll get into that. In the intervening years, you have a CPI adjustment. So that's the existing methodology. It's dictated in this old manual. I'll talk about that in a minute as well. Part of the reason we're here is that, you know, you have, as a district, you can authorize up to 5 years worth of rate adjustments at one time. And that's the subject of the notice and the public hearing. Should you elect to schedule one, you'd be positioned to vote on and enact maximum rates over the course of a 5-year period. Next slide, Ron. So the existing rate adjustment methodology, it is 30 years old. It is outdated at this stage, and it served the agencies here in the county well for some time. I think the main things about it is it hasn't really kept up with some of the changes in the industry, changes in regulations, changes in noticing requirements. And it is also very long and detailed and oftentimes overly rigid. Through that cost-based rate adjustment methodology, the last adjustment Ron already mentioned occurred in 2022. We've had CPI adjustments in 2023 and here again at the beginning of 2024. And so this is your regularly scheduled cost-based rate adjustment year. MCD did submit that cost-based rate adjustment, and our firm for the district and those other 9 agencies have reviewed the merits of the cost-based rate adjustment, namely, did they perform their math correctly, and did they adhere to the terms and conditions of this existing rate methodology? However, as Ron mentioned, the company and the 10 agencies that have come to partnership together on this see benefit in moving towards a newer modern rate adjustment methodology. So we have included aspects, adjustments to this year's rate recommendation to set everyone up to enact this new methodology. Now, just taking some of the basics of what we do, and I'm not going to give you lots of tables and lots of charts. I do have enough here to help you get context around the rate adjustment, but it is a very detailed exercise. In essence, this cost-based rate adjustment approach, the company presents their audited financial statements prepared by a certified accountant, and those are for the last several years. We reviewed, 6 or 7 years worth of audited financial statements from the company, and they present their costs. With that presentation of actual costs, they then forecast what the then current year and then following year costs will be. So it's all tied back to real values. They have to project where they're going to be, but they're tying it back to something real. There are some really important factors affecting this year's rate adjustment, not just for you here, but all of the agencies that Waste Connections serves. First off is this increase in organics processing costs. They bring the organics process, the organics material, the green bin material, the leaves and trees and food scraps. They bring it to a facility that has increased construction and operational needs above what was originally contemplated when the facility was built. And that is by far the single largest contributor to this year's rate adjustment. At this stage, we think that those cost adjustments are over for the meantime, but it is one of those things that's contributing, and it's also outside of Waste Connections' direct control. A secondary factor affecting the rates this year is the fact that for 8 years, the landfill disposal costs that the company has been extending to its client agencies like yourselves have remained flat. They haven't adjusted. There's been no CPI adjustment to them. And so this year, the company presented a request for a market reset, which through evaluation we established was justifiable. And then the minor component here is that their actual kind of cost to do the collection operations, driving trucks that pick up the bins from each home and business, those are really escalating in accordance with the cost of living adjustment. It's in the mid 4.5%. And that's for drivers, that's for fuel, that's for supplies and equipment, insurance. So those costs have actually been fairly stable and increasing in a way that doesn't vary too much from what we see in general CPI or general inflation. There are a couple of other adjustments, and I'll show these on a table in the next slide. In order to set up the rates and to set up the district, your sister agencies, and Waste Connections to move towards a new rate adjustment methodology that has some key benefits, there was a negotiation around what would need to be included this year for all the parties to agree. And two of those were a removal of a prior limitation on corporate overhead, the 30-year-old limitation, that was really established when this was still a small privately held company, and it was a limitation on director salaries or owner salaries. Now that corporate overhead is funding key services that the parent company of Waste Connections provides to the local branches here, IT, HR, recruitment, things like that. And then there was an update to the profit allowance in the agreement. The existing profit allowance that's, you know, that they are allowed to potentially earn, and there's no guarantee that they earn. In fact, over most recent 5 years, there has been very little to no profit that the companies had because of changes in their cost and revenue structures. It is being updated to modern industry standards, and we'll also detail that on a slide. So next slide, please, Ron. So this gives you a summary by bucket, primary bucket within what ratepayers here in the district fund in terms of operations performed by Mission Country. So you can see on the left side, I've broken down several categories. In the middle is what the original application from the company was, and on the very right side is our revised adjustment. By large proportion, the biggest part of what ratepayers pay for is collection services. Again, those are the people with the trucks and the bins and all of that. You can see what the profit allowance is, both under the existing methodology and the new methodology. And then post-collection services, post-collection meaning after the trucks pick up the materials, they bring it to the organics facility, they bring it to the landfill, and they bring it to the recycling facility. And you can see those costs here. There are agency fees, franchise fees that are paid to the district to cover your costs associated with management and administration of this agreement and other impacts and uses of the public right-of-way. All of that sums up to a total cost projection. So really what we're talking around here is what's the forecasted cost for the coming year and what does current rate revenues yield to the district? And you can see that at 3.67-ish million. The methodology calculates, you know, do we have a surplus or a shortfall in revenues compared to forecasted expenses, and what amount of rate adjustment is necessary in order to fully fund the cost projections and the reasonable profit margin and the agency fees. So you can see we've had minor shifts in a couple of categories identified through the course of this, yielding, you know, originally it was a 12.47% increase for 2025. After all is said and done, our recommendation is a small adjustment above that, which sets you up for a future of different benefits with the company. This is really kind of the add deduct that we had over the course of this review, starting with 12.47. One thing that we did is we noted that the company's financial statements were depreciating rolling stock, the trucks, over a seven-year period, which may have been appropriate 30 years ago, but now those trucks are lasting longer. And so we adjusted it to a more common 10-year period, which subtracted 1.62 from the rate. Adding back some of that corporate overhead, brought it up again. There are some service enhancements that the company is offering regionally and seeking to fund regionally through less than 0.5% change in terms of the rate. You can see that the updated profit allowance is a, you know, just under 1%. And then after all said and done, we have to recalculate the district fees because your fees are based on a percentage of the overall revenues. And then there was also some misallocated fees that we corrected for. So you can see kind of how we get from 12.47 to 13.18. With the next slide, I want to talk about what you're getting out of this. So, you know, small change in the overall rate to ratepayers, but then it's the next slide that I'll talk about the benefits from the new methodology. This just gives folks a summary. What are folks paying today? What will they be paying if you authorize the rates in January? Your most common subscription level is that 32-gallon subscription level. So that's kind of the middling size bin, not the super smallest and not the biggest. So you can see going from $39.45 a month to $44.65, which is a change of $5 a month starting in the new year. Next slide, please. So enhancements. So there were a few things through this process. And again, City of San Luis Obispo was the lead agency working with input and influence from from the district here, with Ron's engagement, and then also with stakeholder input from the other eight agencies. And there were a few things that were known to be potential benefits. One of those is the ability to have a customer assistance program. So the company is offering, with the new methodology and the new rates, a 20% discount to those subscribed to the 32-gallon service or the smaller 20-gallon service. And that is, there was no additional rate funding. So I just want to be clear about that. It's not like you said, well, let's bump the rate in order to fund this. They're having to take that out of their chunk, right? Their profitability. The only kind of caveat on that is the specifics of how that program would roll out are still to be developed. There would need to be a partnership between the district and the company in order to identify those that would be eligible. But that is an important service offering that's on the table. And then these next two are benefits that customers could receive included in the rate adjustment in their funding. The rate adjustment, that 0.48 that I was showing in service enhancements, is funding only half of the cost of these new services. One is that during cleanup weeks now, folks here in the district can pay a discounted rate for a bulky item. This will change it so that first bulky item during each of your two cleanup weeks is at no direct cost to the rate payer. The intention here and the reasons Waste Connections recommended this is to help provide easier no-cost solutions, no direct cost solutions for folks to get rid of unwanted materials and hopefully have an impact on illegal dumping and other abandoned waste. So that's one, a new service. The other is a promotion of and the ability to, for every residential customer, get an exchange on their cart, a cart once a year. Typically, that's probably going to be the green one because it's got the ickier stuff in it. Mine gets dirty at home. So this would be, folks could call up, they could request an exchange, and Waste Connections will leave a clean cart in place and take the dirty one away. That one, for so long as it can be cleaned and still meets good operating condition, will be put back into circulation. So this isn't funding purchase of new carts. It's really time and materials for folks to pick up the carts, bring them back to the yard, wash them safely, handle all the water the correct way. But it's a good way of making sure folks have their carts clean. And that's especially a concern now that we're enhancing our use of those green carts to capture organic waste materials and meet state law. So those are three new service enhancements that are included and on the table. Next slide. Folks just want to know sometimes what's in the rate. What are we really paying for here? And so this kind of breaks it down into a simple term. Over half of it's for the people in the trucks and the customer service and the fuel and the tires and the maintenance. 30% of it is that post-collection cost. Again, the cost of landfilling, cost of organics processing, and the cost of recycling, which are largely external to Waste Connections direct control, though landfill is a sister company agency of theirs. Agency fees here in the district are 10% of the overall rate and the rate revenues, and the company's profitability on all of that is 5%. So just wanted folks to get a kind of a sense of scale and really what you're paying for when you pay your solid waste rates. Next slide, please. And then my favorite part, the new rate adjustment methodology, really part of the future, right? So when the district and San Luis Obispo got together, they had desire and expressed set of objectives. Having a rate methodology that creates more stability, more predictability, more fairness to ratepayers and to sister agencies, make it clear, easier to understand, easier to administer, and more cost-effective to minister. And we have a track record. My firm, myself personally, have a record in doing this with agencies working together in this collaborative fashion. And so what we've put forward and put together, and it's in our report that's attached to your staff report, and we will have a forthcoming detailed exhibit that would be available in January for you to consider amending your agreement with. It's 8 pages. It's not the 100 that the existing methodology is. But it does effectively the following things. For the direct costs that Mission Country pays for collection services and post-collection services, those are going to be capped at a CPI, cap of 5% and a floor of 2% in any given year, with exception of a cost-based year, which I'll cover in a minute. But the default will be going forward, those elements of what you compensate them with in your rates are going to be capped. Any exceedance of the cap will roll forward to a following year, but likewise, anything below the floor will also roll forward to the following year. And the interest there is to kind of narrow the range of rates changed. Prior experience here in the district is we go up 40%, we'll have 0%, we'll go 10%, we'll go to 2%. This will keep it into a much narrow band of change over the course of time. A second element that's helpful here is a revenue balancing mechanism. One of the reasons that rates here in the district have gone up over the last few years, and Ron showed a slide with 40 and 50% numbers on it, has actually been that as your rates have gone up, folks have done a great job decreasing their waste container size. They've been going from the 64-gallon to the 32 and saving money because they see that change in the rate and they say, darn it, I'm going to go to a smaller size. Same with the 32 going down to a 20. So that's great for the rate payer. They have options and they have choices, but it actually has a revenue eroding effect. So it's kind of a snowball, right? Rates go up, folks downsize. So rates go up, so folks downsize. So this actually is a solution to that, meaning if folks downsize and that leads to a significant change in the rate revenue to the company, well, that will carry back forward in a couple of years down the road. So what it's doing is just kind of stabilizing the revenue generating ability of the rates themselves, though, while still maintaining customer choice about what size they use. This has the benefit of both preventing those fluctuations and those spikes. It also keeps your hauling company partner from griping too much when you promote high diversion programs. And then finally, these last two elements is really to get away from this, whether you like it or not, every 3-year cycle for a cost-based rate adjustment. Expanding it to a cost-based rate adjustment no more than every 5 years. And if neither party calls for a cost-based rate adjustment, continue with your indexed approach and letting that continue forward. I've done this with 7 agencies in Marin County, and we actually just crossed the threshold where they could have requested their first cost-based and didn't. And so their indexed adjustment approach is still carrying forward and the parties are happy. The final piece of this, and this is typical in virtually all solid waste agreements in the state, you know, there is the possibility that other extraordinary things can happen, right? We saw it in COVID. We saw it with China's national sword back in 2017, which disrupted the recyclables global commodity marketplace. The company can come forward. So, you know, in essence here, you're not going to be adjusting their rates based on costs very often. But there needs to be a little bit of a release valve in case there is an extraordinary change in cost. And the one big one that's hanging out there is affecting everybody in the state is CARB's electric vehicle or zero emission vehicle, but for all intents and purposes, electric vehicle mandate. That affects the hauling operations. It affects them all throughout the state. We know at some point that's going to become something that comes forward. So that's just an example of the kind of thing that you might expect to hear about in the coming 5 to 6 years or so. And just to put kind of a pin on that, it's, you know, garbage trucks cost about $500,000 if they're diesel or CNG, and they cost about $1 million if they're electric, at least in today's marketplace. So there's nothing in this application for that yet. It's still a ways down the road, but it is just something to be aware of coming down the pike. Go ahead, Ron. Finally, everyone wants to know how they compare to their sister agencies. So this is not just here in San Luis Obispo County, but we've also included others from around the Central Coast region in Santa Barbara and elsewhere. So you can see, and this is ordered so that I always keep the same orientation. Because 32-gallon rates are your most common rate, and there's no real comparison for 20 gallons, most people don't have the 20 gallons you have. You can see you're kind of in the middle of the pack on the 32-gallon rate. We'll go to the next slide. These are all over the place because I don't reorder in ascending value, but you can see for your 64-gallon rate, still not the highest, but not the lowest. And some of the reasons that you're not the highest or not the lowest is you're a bit further distanced from some of the corporation yards and the post-collection facilities. So it's really a time and distance factor. 96-gallon, Ron? And then actually, your rate structure is pretty beneficial on the 96-gallon front. You're amongst some of the lowest in the comparison. And then finally, for commercial rates, again, kind of in the middle of the pack, not the highest, not the lowest. And again, there's a lot of factors that go into these, right? How far you are from some of the operational core is one of those primary factors. And I think that brings us back to you, Ron. Happy to take questions when they're there.
Right. Don't go away, Garth.
I'm not going.
Yeah, I was just going to say you got to be available.
Right. And I do want to recognize we have Jeff Claren here, General Manager of Waste Connections, the San Luis Obispo unit. And we have Meg Buckingham from the city of San Luis Obispo, who's been our partner through this whole process. And I want to thank her very much, as well as Garth and Jeff. I did want to mention that our Finance Advisory Committee did hear this item Monday night. And the committee was provided a similar presentation. Of course, it was by me, so it wasn't as great as Garth's, but it sufficed. And there was general agreement and support by the committee for both items that were talking about this evening. So with that, I was just going to leave the motion up here and any questions the board might have.
Can we have any questions? No, very good presentation. Very clear. You have a...
The exchange. So we have three different bins. So you can exchange one of them every year?
Correct. You can do one. That's the offering, you know, that the company was able to put forward. Part of it is, I think, wanting to have an opportunity for folks to pick. In my experience, you don't really need to do more, you know, one every year is going to be kind of, you know, you can cycle through if you need to. It's not typical to do every one every year. And I think it's also just want to be careful about their inventory. So this is a first step. I mean, I think in a few years, if it's a very popular program and it's something that folks want to see more of, that's the kind of thing that you could potentially negotiate into a future rate adjustment.
Thank you for clarifying. Any other questions? Okay, we'll go to public comment. If you're in the room, would you step up to the podium? State your name for the record, please.
Richard Margetson. Just a question. If this sets the rates for 5 years, and at some point the board wants to change the franchise fee from 10 to 5 or whatever, is that easily done with this structure, working it into, you know, billing and everything with the number of agencies that are involved? I know it would only be for our district, but how complex is it? Would that be, or are we locked in for 5 years of taking 10% franchise fee?
Okay. Before we answer that, is there any other public comment? Laura, is there anybody online?
If you're online, please raise your hand. No public comment online.
Okay, we'll close public comment and answer the question, please.
Yeah, that's a great question. With a five-year rate notice and authorization process, you're authorizing maximum rates. And if you were to have a change in franchise fee that would lower the franchise fee, you'd still be below the maximum rate. So nothing would preclude you from doing that with the notice that's going out. If the converse were true, if you were looking to add franchise fees and add programs, that would require re-noticing before you could move forward with that change.
Okay, thank you. All right. Do we have anybody wants to make a motion?
Okay, I will move that the board... I guess I got to read all that. Tentatively support the 2025 solid waste rates as presented, and approve the publication and mailing of a notice consistent with the article of the California Constitution and Proposition 218 Omnibus Implementation Act as it relates to solid waste rates. I move that the board, I can just say that the recommendation as is, right? Does that suffice?
That's easier.
With the change in the highlighted yellow area.
The change in January 9th,
2025. Okay. We have
a motion and a second.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, can we take a roll call vote, please?
Director Forcroy.
Yes.
Vice President Womack.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
President Ohelski.
Yes. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for your presentation. It was very thorough, and I appreciated it. Not only the written part, but the verbal part. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Y'all can go home now. Okay. With that being said, then we'll move on to item 7B, which is the review of the proposed changes to the district's reserve policies. The recommendation is that the board review the draft policy changes and provide direction to staff to bring the final draft policies to the December 5th, 2024 board meeting for approval. Ron?
Yes. We'll try to go through this relatively quickly. There's nothing dramatic in what we're proposing. The thing I did want to recognize is the kind of the confusion I had when I was looking back at our reserve policies and how they originated. We adopted our first reserve policies back in 2006. They were very minor adjustments were amended in 2007, but there was a significant change in 2012. which added more specific language, percentages, and amounts to each fund, goal for each fund. Then in 2016, there was an odd amendment to the policies that didn't really reflect anything from the 2012 and more referenced the 2007. So with this confusion, I'm recommending that we, and our accounting procedures are really based on the 2012 policies. So I used that as our base. So when we come back in December, that we will want to repeal and replace everything, so there's no future confusion on what's what was done here, hopefully in 2024. So with that, we'll start with Fund 100. It's very basic here, 2006 and in 2016. There was no really identified funding goal for the reserve policy in the, I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice here, in that reserve policy. In 2012, there's a funding goal of $200,000, which when we looked at it, thought this was way too much, that we don't need anything close. What we're recommending is, one, make sure it has two different reserve categories, IT and general contingency, that we just go down to a general contingency reserve, have a maximum funding goal of $50,000. And just for reference, right now, there's about just under $42,000 in that. And that there is a random reserve policy regarding reserves for septic pumping maintenance that should sunset. So we're recommending the removal of that. The way that looks in the strikeout is really just remove number two, add the $50,000, and just have the general contingency reserve. Any questions on that before I move on?
Any questions? Okay. No, go on, Ron.
All right. Fund 301 fire, a little more involved in this. It's mainly in the vehicle and equipment replacement. If you recall, during our budget process, we relooked at our sinking fund for vehicle replacement. We upped the baseline to $130,000 as part of the 24-25 budget process. So we're just recommending that that be inserted into this policy. Adding an inflationary value of 5%, which is, again, what we did in approval of the budget in our sinking fund model. And this is a minor change, just changing the responsibility for updating the replacement schedule to the general manager, just to ensure continuity, because we have had several battalion chiefs, which is referenced in the current one. And then a statement that says that the reserve amount will be reduced in that sinking fund, and that and in the on the spreadsheet and in the reserve amount when a vehicle is purchased. This is just clarification. Again, not much added except for that last. And then upon the purchase of a new vehicle, that vehicle reserve be reduced by the corresponding amount. And that we look at that sinking fund every 2 years. That was something that we did approve as part of the budget process, and I didn't put in the bullets. Any questions on this particular one?
That last section there was, I think, the fourth bullet in your previous slide. Is that the situation with our last fire truck?
No.
Okay.
We bought out of our cash,
right,
but we didn't reduce the reserve.
That's okay.
And the reason for that, and this was made from a public comment and I agreed with, is that it's then in our sinking fund doesn't reflect the true balance of what we're trying to achieve. Now, it doesn't preclude the board from future adding more reserve amount to the vehicle and equipment reserve, but this is to reflect really what sinking fund is doing. And so there's more transparency and understanding. And it wasn't clear to me if that was the intent. And that's where we got into, well, I didn't see that in the reserve, so we didn't use reserve.
I guess that's what I'm right. being confused right. about. We set up a reserve to pay for the truck, but we didn't use it.
Right. And so because we had the cash.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is just to be.
It's a good place to be in, but right. we want to be very certain
right.
that we've got all the pots accounted for and that we're not keeping money around that doesn't need to be sitting around.
Right. And that money could be allocated to other reserves.
Yes.
Um, See, we want to add a statement. This is going to capital outlay reserves. We add a statement that during years where there are surplus funds that we do allocate to the capital reserve, because there is a $5 million goal, which I think is prudent, and our current balance is $540,000. So we know we need to build that reserve up for multiple reasons, especially after our building assessment on Station 15. So basically, it's just adding that statement to the capital reserve. Moving on, in general contingency, we want to delete reference to the operating funds maintenance budget. And what I want to do is quickly to show that the statement shows that, which is an average amount of $1.2 million. That's very dated. And the operating budget fluctuates. And so we don't want to be tied into 15% of something that's stated in the reserve. So we're going to leave that more open-ended so that we increase our funding goal according to whatever our operation and maintenance budget is, which has been increasing quite a bit. Any general questions on that?
Any questions?
The slide before, the capital outlay reserve, annual appropriation of $10,000 a year, maximum goal of $5 million. We now are at $540,000. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be around long enough to see us
well,
reach.
Well, we'll be talking goal. About an item here next that could help us bolster
okay.
that. You know,
okay.
So we have some decisions to
okay.
make on
okay. Because that just seemed like...
Well, it's and a this good is... point. Even with that item, it would still take a long time to reach $5
million. Well, yeah. And as thoroughly as we're going through all of this, it seemed like an odd one to have overlooked, but we didn't overlook it.
Well, I think part of the problem is it hasn't been that, like, and during my tenure here, we haven't added to this. And so that's an oversight by your general managers, including myself.
First one that I've known about.
No.
Thank you.
Okay, Ron, keep
okay,
going.
Okay, we're going here. We're moving into water. This one is fairly straightforward as well. There's a reference to a fee reduction that aren't realistic. It's basically when, if there's a fee waiver or some other decision by the board that we need to dip into rate stabilization. I don't think those are realistic language, so I'm recommending that comes out. And then that the maximum funding goal under 10% of the operation maintenance budget, it right now is estimated $2 million. It would be at about $200,000, so we're close on this one in terms of rate stabilization because our current balance is $158,000. So basically the way that looks is we're just taking out number two, which I didn't feel was realistic to have in a policy that I don't think could sway our revenues enough to warrant taking rate stabilization money. So we keep this pretty much the same, only taking out the double I.
And we have been contributing to this annually.
We had been until I ran the numbers, we're off by some. And we have a recommendation coming from UAC coming up here that might help us with that. General contingency, this one is just moving the $57,000 was actually in the 2017 amendment. And we have been contributing this $57,000 ever since 2017. So really, it's just putting in that amount. And then you know, it's easier to look at. Oops, I'm sorry. Everything else stays the same. I just left down here in the second bullet that the 60% of operational goals would be about $1.2 million today. And we have about $756,000. So we're moving well along on that one. And then capital outlay, the current or the 2012 policy has these funding goals that are way out of date. So we were recommending just taking funding goals out of this, just like with in the fire where we take out an operation and maintenance with a number on it. If you recall during our rate analysis 3 years ago now, we had a funding goal of $800,000 to fund capital projects and bringing our reserves up. And that would be for, you know, funding our five-year capital plan. And I think this would provide flexibility to the board to set that annual funding rate as part of any future rate study that we're going to, water rate study that we'll be doing. It's probably more consistent on how we would like to tailor everything to our revenue and expenses. If we're looking at if the next rate study shows the $800,000 isn't feasible or it's we could do more, that gives the board the discretion to do that. And also during the rate setting process, we kind of set an informal goal minimum, keeping $1 million in reserve, just because we know if there's any major disruption in water pipe, tank, anything, that it's very expensive these days. The current amount in our reserves are about $2 million. And so the way those changes look, that we will just be adding a statement about the funding goal being determined during a periodic rate study approved by the board from time to time, and then setting that $1 million funding or minimum funding goal. And again, it's just a goal. And any questions on those?
Any questions? Nope. Go on, Ron.
We're on a roll. I'll go quickly through these. We have three reserves right now: water quality, water conservation, and basin management reserve. All three of these have not been utilized in the 5 years I've been here, or from what I've seen from previous years. And so we're tying up about $200,000 could be better utilized than sitting here waiting for these three, because basin management and water conservation are in our line item budget. That's how we're budgeting for those now. So we don't really need those reserves. And then the water quality one was settlement money from MTBE settlement. And I think that could be better utilized somewhere else as well. So we're recommending the elimination of those three reserves.
That settlement was from the 90s?
Yeah. So
has
that
MTBE been mitigated then?
Yeah. So there's no real need for it. I did want to say we brought this to Utility Advisory Committee at their last meeting, and they agreed with the general recommendations made on all these reserves, water fund 500 reserves. And they we talked about where to put those, and they thought the best use of those would put a majority of the reserves into capital outlay. And they maybe top off the rate stabilization reserve, because there isn't really that much left in that. And that would really help, as it was pointed out by a public member, help in our rate study too, where we wouldn't have to factor that into the revenue needs. If there's no questions on water, we'll just keep moving. Any questions on water?
Nope.
Solid waste. There was actually a 2012 reserve, because we still had solid waste franchise agreement back then. I just want to modify it to take out reference to 6 months of revenue to operate the safe solid waste collection system, which I think is totally unrealistic in this day and age. And it's also that we just reference reflecting our mandatory responsibilities from the state, our commitments to public information and general administration of the programs. And we reduced the funding goal that was in the 2012 from 300,000 to 200,000. And this could still be debatable whether, you know, what that reserve amount would be. But again, as we're in the early phases of some new state mandates, we want to keep enough in there in case we need it. We did move 100,000 as part of this budget process. So if we kept it at 200,000 and recommending a 75,000 annual contribution until we hit that 200,000, we could top that off relatively quick. Any questions on the solid?
No, any questions? I just, on that fourth line from the bottom.
Yes.
That's the way it's edited. It says 20,000. Shouldn't it be 200?
It should. Well, there's actually two zeros. You can't see it. There's one in the middle there. Yeah.
That's very confusing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. My error.
No, I could see how you could not see that.
Okay. So it's 200,000. Yeah, okay. I'm fine.
And this was another important one. Richard's question about lowering the franchise fee or doing something that when our fund balance is achieved, you know, that it on board's discretion that we find a way to maybe allocate funds that aren't needed into rate relief opportunities, which could be a lowering of franchise fee or some other type of a program. Okay. I'm sorry, almost forgot that one. Now, the next ones are very basic. Section 4, we're just recommending that we take the current title and just simplify it to annual allocation of fund balance. Strike out a lot of the language that is not relevant, especially if we make these changes, and just go to positive net fund balance at the end of each fiscal year will be allocated by the board to other reserves within the originating budget.
Okay.
And then transfers, this is really just putting in a clarifying sentence. In this instance, the funding would then be allocated. This is if we eliminate a reserve. Sorry, I should have packed up there. And if that's what we do tonight or agree to do in December, this just kind of clarifies that in this instance, the funding may be allocated to another reserve within the originating budget. Okay. And with that, are there any other questions?
Any questions? Very thorough presentation.
Kind of as fast as I could go to.
Hey, I saw it twice. I saw you at the FAC and I saw you tonight. Very good both times. Yeah, you have a question, Chuck?
I'm just shocked that all of our previous reserve policies weren't in alignment and didn't all agree and reference each other. Thank you for the help from the public in straightening this out, too. I know you got some help.
I know. And Richard Markison did help with this, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions, comments? All right, we'll go to public comment in the room here. If you'd like to make a public comment, step up to the podium, state your name for the record, and the rest of the 3 minutes is yours.
Okay. Just for clarification, the recommendation was a recommendation from utilities, I think, and finance about the $200,000. Mm-hmm. Are you asking the board today to give that direction to, or are you doing that in to allocate to bring whole the rate stabilization reserve with the rest of the money going into capital outlay for that? And then the other thing is the reason I asked the question during solid waste presentation was, and I still don't think I have a clear answer, we're going to hit that $200,000 real quick. This 5 year, by signing this agreement, are we locked in for 5 years of taking the 10%, or can we adjust it annually with them? Or, you know, because part of this whole process is that we don't have to do this every 3 years or all the time. I just want to make sure that there's clarification that if the board decides to reduce the franchise fee, it's an easy process and we have the ability to do that outside or included in that proposal and contract. So,
all right. Thank you. Laura, anybody online?
There's no hands raised online.
Okay. We'll close public comment and bring it back to Mr. Munns.
It would be great to get some direction on that $200,000. Again, what was recommended both by finance and UAC was a majority going to capital outlay and the other part to rate stabilization. If the board is in agreement with that, that'd be helpful for me bringing back the in December.
So you would just like some discussion and direction on that item?
Well, if there's general consensus on that concept, then...
Right, that's why I said direction, so right. Okay.
I understood that is what you presented as you wanted us to tentatively approve, yes. And so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at the FAC, that was my understanding.
And UAC as well.
Yeah, because we're not approving anything tonight, it's just...
Right, it's coming know, back on the next board meeting.
I'm happy to answer the second part of the question from the member of the public. So as you all know, that five-year period, it isn't just coming from nowhere. That's coming from the Proposition 218 Omnibus Implementation Act. So 5 years is the maximum period that you all can, in one Prop 218 proceeding, say, here's the maximum each year that we're going to take in the increase in rates. Mm. So this is all based on Prop 218 and the maximum that you are, you can't do 7 years, you can't do 10 years. The most that you can do in one 218 Prop 218 proceeding is 5 years. So to address specifically the question, what you're saying is here is the absolute maximum that we are asking our residents, our voters, to approve us going to each year. And that is every year a permissive a rate increase that you can take. I think the specific question is about how the franchise fee sort of works out each year. Regardless of how that rate is broken out, the only thing that Proposition 218 requires you to go to the voters for is what the maximum fee is. So you can increase the franchise, you can decrease it, so long as you don't exceed the maximum rate that your voters approve in this Prop 218 proceeding. You can do that. You can go below it. You just can't go over it.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Any more discussion, or do we have a motion?
Go ahead.
I move that the board tentatively approve the changes to the reserve policies as presented. We didn't have any amendments, right?
Nope.
So as presented, direct the staff to bring back the amended reserve policies for adoption at the December 5th, 2024 board meeting.
I'll second that.
Is that based on what Ron just talked about being included?
I think basically just you nodding your heads was enough because it was.
That's what I'm just, yeah.
Yeah.
I just want a clarification as to what everybody knew where we were going with that. Okay. Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Vice President Womack.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
Director Forcroy.
Yes.
President Ohelski.
Yes. All right, we'll move on then to item 7C, review of the results of the San Luis Obispo County Fire/CalFire 5-year billing audit for fire services. Recommend accepting the SLO County's fire overpayment audit results and approve the release and settlement agreement. Ron, it's back in your court again.
This is...
I'm so happy about this, you can't...
yes, Mia from the county is here. She's been the person that we've been working through county admin, so I appreciate her being here tonight. Thank you.
We were wondering why she was here.
Just a little bit of background for people that haven't been following this. We've been working with SLO County Fire, Cal Fire, to resolve a schedule billing issue since late 2021. The county has completed an in-depth audit going back to fiscal year 2017-18 with the assistance from a gentleman named Eric Cleveland, which was hired by the district to support the audit findings. And Mia was very instrumental on piecing back together some accounting errors or missing data, I should say, to come to a conclusion on this. There continues to be some disagreement regarding terms of the current agreement executed in 2024. So both parties agreed that we need to renegotiate a new contract, and hopefully that'll be in place for fiscal year 24-25. So we have clarity because the existing agreement is a little gray, light gray in a lot of areas. So we want to, yeah. So it's definitely one of those contracts we need to revisit. The outcome of the audit was an overpayment by the district by almost $1.2 million. I believe this is a fair settlement amount and recommend the board approve the settlement agreement as presented by the county. And that is my presentation.
Any questions of Mr. Munns? Any public comment in the boardroom?
And if you're online, raise your hand.
I've got a comment in the boardroom, Laura. State your name for the record, please.
Richard Margetson. I think this leads to that question about the fund balance for capital improvement being so low. This was probably where the board's going to move that money. So
thank you. Any comments online, Laura?
There are none.
Okay, seeing none.
I have a comment. Thank you, Ron, for your hard work on this and your persistence.
Yes. So I'm going to make the motion on this since I've been I've been pushing very hard on this one. So I move that the board accept the San Luis Obispo County Fire Schedule A overpayment audit results and the settlement amount of $1,199,437 and approve the release and settlement agreement and authorize the board president to sign.
I'll second your motion.
Thank you. So we have a motion and a second. Can I take a roll call? Or can you take a roll call, please?
Yes, President Ohilski.
Yes.
Director Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Cesenia.
Yes.
Vice President Womack.
Yes.
Okay, that's approved. So now we move on to agenda item number 8. Public comment for items not on the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you for your help.
Mia.
So now we have public comment for items not on the agenda.
If you're online, please raise your hand and in the boardroom, come to the podium.
Cut me off. Yes, would you state your name for the record, Richard?
Richard Margetson. It's that time of year. You all have a flyer in front of you for the 19th Annual Needs and Wishes Holiday Fundraiser, December 14th, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. At the community, South Bay Community Center. The parade is in the morning and then we're the rest of the day. Most of you have been there before, but we have silent auction. There's usually somewhere between 250 and 350 silent auction items. Gift certificate table, a jug to bring your spare change to fill the big water jug. We have a bake sale. We have the pie lady from Slow Bake Bakery provides us with pies every year with prizes underneath. They're usually gone by noon, between noon and 1 o'clock. We also have a raffle. Part of it's more children oriented and the other's more adult oriented. Entertainment all day at some point, either music playing or entertainment on stage. Just for Claire, for those that are interested, the Taiko drummers who just blew the doors off the place last year and got 2 standing ovations are at 2 o'clock. So
every year they blow the door.
This last year, Chuck will tell you, they were unbelievable.
2 o'clock.
Yeah, 2 o'clock. And then we have the toy store. And the toy store usually has 350 to 400 toys. We also, you can buy them as gifts, but we also put out the barrels for Operation Santa Claus through the fire department. Last year we filled 8 full barrels, equivalent of 8 full barrels. But at the end of the day, we still have a few toys left. In the past, I've had a donor who has asked for a total of what that comes to and has written a check. But that's not going to go on forever. This community and the people that attend that event, that toy store should be sold out before 6 o'clock rolls around. So just encourage people to come, even if you just buy one toy and stick it in the barrel. From what I'm hearing around the county with the economy, there's going to be a great need for toys this year. There's a lot of families that have already put their name in through Season of Hope. So all different price ranges. Most of the toys are from five to 25. There's a few more expensive toys than that. The one big change this year is I have a donor who came forward and we had a talk. We have food. We have hot dogs, hamburgers, and veggie burgers, and then free sodas and water and cookies and stuff. That's all free. But this year he and his wife are going to sponsor free hot dogs. So everybody at the door will get a ticket for a free hot dog. So you can come to the event, eat, be entertained, and you don't have to spend a penny. we hope you come and spend a penny. But the event has always been geared towards anybody being able to come get in the Christmas spirit. Last thing I want to say is this is the biggest fundraiser in Los Osos every year. And half the proceeds go to the SLO NOR clinic, the free clinic. And half of it goes to 40 Prado, the homeless center. This last year, our donation put Needs and Wishes as the largest non-grant related donor to the NOR clinic all time. And their premise is that for every, because all the doctors volunteer their time, for every dollar donated, they can provide $100 worth of medical service. This event has provided over $20 million of medical service to Los Osos in the county. And for the last 5 years, I found out from Rupert Chowans, who's one of the, that was one of the founders of the NOR Clinic, that we have covered anybody from Los Osos, Morro Bay, or Cayucas that's gone to the clinic for the last 5 years. So please come. We're going to talk about it in December. I'm sure Chuck's going to make a plug at the end of the meeting, and hope to see you there.
Thank you for your efforts in this, Richard. Okay, anybody online, Laura?
There is no one online.
Okay, we'll close this item and we'll move to item number 9, the administrative and committee reports. So utilities is written, general manager's report. Would you like to give us that 9B, please?
I wanted to quickly update the board on the South Bay upper aquifer well that we're shutting it down. Kind of the nail that closed the coffin on it was the nitrate analyzer went out, cost about $30,000 to replace. It's high in PFAS over the MCL quite a bit. It was going to require treatment for that. And the brine and hauling and other operational expenses, we've decided to shut that well down.
Which well was that?
The South Bay Upper that has the nitrate treatment on it. Okay. It produces very little water. You could look in the utilities department report and see the quantity, but it's just been a practical cost-saving measure. It's not to say we couldn't reactivate it at some point, but at this point in time, we're moving on. Did you have a comment there?
How about Program C?
Okay. Well, Program C is, it's moving quickly. We have Hartzell doing the construction. The block building is about completed. All the piping is done. We've got the PG&E conduit in. The wire hasn't been pulled yet. I do have an invoice over here for someone to sign for me. So we're starting to spend a lot of money, and we're excited about that. I'm not sure of the exact time of completion because there's a few things that could slow it down, but I'm expecting that online by late February or maybe in March.
Okay.
We're excited. We're really happy with the progress there. General manager's report. I wanted to talk, and it's really another utilities, the SCADA project contract award. We got three bids. There were two bids that were lower than Cannon and Associates, who we decided to go with. I reviewed the proposals, Rob Miller and Steve Tanaka as well. We interviewed Cannon. Their original proposal was up in the high 900s, and it was like kind of the wish list, I think, that so we could phase in further parts of that wish list, but we can get a very great, good, solid system, and it's going to be about $855,000. Our estimate was $750,000. We had two lower bids, but knowing the companies, they just don't have the experience of Cannon. So we went with local firm with the experience, a little bit more money, but I think we're going to get a better product. But I wanted to make sure, and this was within my authorization, but because of the size of the contract and the project itself, the importance of the project, I wanted to make sure the board was aware. Other than that, there's been some things on the growth management ordinance, a little bit of a twist at the October 29th meeting. The board approved the growth management ordinance amendments. It approved the amendments to the community plan that the Coastal Commission advised them to do, but the habitat conservation plan funding was delayed. They spent quite a bit, probably a couple hours on the 29th talking about that. It's going to come back November 12th, supposedly, with a resolution. And so it's a wait and see, because without that piece, nothing can move forward. So I'll keep you updated on that. And then I just wanted to really quick, we're doing the regional hazardous mitigation plan, which is important to us because without it, we couldn't be applying for FEMA funds. So that's going to be a pretty much in the next about eight months. I'm going to have to be spending quite a bit of time on that because we have to be actively involved to be included. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Any questions on the general manager's report? Seeing none. Then we don't have a LOCAC report, I don't think, do we? No. Horrible. Yeah, but there's nobody here to give it. Oh, you're going to give it?
Well, I will. I attended the last LOCAC meeting on behalf of the CSD.
All right, the LOCAC report then will be given by Mr. Cecina.
There is an opening on District 1 of LOCAC. If you need something to do in the evenings and want to contribute to your community, District 1, I'm not sure what neighborhoods that is, but check with LOCAC. Of course, Claire Momberger, county staff, went over the 1029 hearing that Ron talked about and all of the issues around the habitat conservation plan approval being delayed. But I think they're on target for December, shipping that back to the Coastal Commission. Mr. Gibson further clarified that a lot of the delay with the habitat conservation plan is how to fund it and how to implement the plan. It's going to take a loan from the general fund, and that's causing some concern with the rest of the supervisors. The things I reported on for the CSD were the solid rate increase, water rate study coming up, new groundwater monitoring wells, two of them by the end of the year, bringing us up to a total of five over the past 2 years. The emergency services plan that we're putting together. Those are the things that I reported on. And I guess the big thing on their agenda that came out of the blue for me, there were a couple of, I think, a vacation rental conversion, single family residence being converted. And they brought back the house up in Cabrillo that a couple months ago there had been a request for a road evacuation or vacation. They've dropped that part of the project to prove the house. But there was also a proposal for a 10-unit condominium hotel, two new buildings at the Van Buren property at the east end of town. A lot of discussion didn't really move forward very far because we don't really know if it's going to be condominium or sold as long-term rental. We just don't know what the project really is yet, but it's coming.
All right, thank you. So the written chamber report, and there was no park and rec meeting, no report. UAC, Utility Advisory, it's back to you again, Chuck.
All the things you've already heard about, we talked about the town hall and the basin management activities and mostly the reserve policies. That was the big thing that we went over, making sure that we find a way to fund the reserves that we need to have and then eliminate reserves we don't need so that we're efficient with our funds.
Okay. Finance advisory?
The committee voted to approve the warrant register, to receive and file the financial reports, and to receive and file our relatively new investment reports. And we're kicking off about $100,000 a quarter on our reserves. So I think that's very great.
Okay. Emergency services. We didn't have a meeting. We have a meeting this month. BMC, who is the verbal report? Is it Chuck or Ron?
Mr. Munns. I was going to ask why I punted. I know we talked always about the town hall and then just after that, but
We talked about budget. And so the prelim budget was rolled out, and we were talking a November approval of that and possibly canceling either the November or December, depending, because a little bit of talk about the transient model and its progress. It is delayed a bit, but I think Cleith Harris is getting close to rolling that out. And I think that's why we may have a December meeting, because they were trying to see if we could get a preview.
Everyone's anxious to talk about that.
And then, of course, the HCP growth management ordinance and community plan.
Okay. Any announcement of district and community interest and reports on attendance of public meeting, training programs, conferences, and seminars?
I did go to the October 29th Board of Supervisors meeting. I did speak, but I clearly identified myself as a member of the community and not representing this board or the Basin Management Committee.
Okay. All right. Any previously asked questions that we have responses
none
to?
None of those right now.
Okay. Seeing none, does anybody want to pull an item off of the consent agenda? Item number 11 here. Okay, seeing none, then we'll take public comment on the administrative committee reports and the consent agenda. Is there anybody in the boardroom who would like to speak? Seeing nobody, Laura, is there anybody online?
If you're online, raise your hand. There's no public comment online.
Okay, can we have a motion then?
I move that we receive and file the administrative and committee reports and approve the consent agenda.
Do we have a second?
A second.
Oh,
and a third.
We have second by.
I think Chuck can.
We'll give the second to Chuck then. Can we have a roll call on that too, please, Laura?
Yes, Director Forcry.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
Vice President Womack.
Yes.
President Ohilski.
Yes. So, item number 12: discussion of pulled consent items. There are none. Item 13, does anybody have any future agenda items that they'd like to bring?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Mr. Forcry, please speak.
Just following up on past agenda items, I want to make sure that we move forward with agendizing funding options for Cabrillo Basin. That is something that we talked about earlier this summer. And then additional staffing, potentially succession planning, our major work initiatives for 24-25. It's a very long list. We're accomplishing a lot of things, but this is something I think we need to take seriously.
Okay. We don't need to take public comment on that. Okay. So we'll move on. We'll move on to closing board comment. Well, actually, we won't, because we're going back into closed session. I forgot. So we're going back into closed session, and then we'll come back out and report out back to open session when we're done. Thank you, everybody, for your attendance and patience.
But that didn't work.
Okay, the board is coming out of closed session. And is there any motion that anybody would like to make?
Yes, I'll make the motion to instruct General Manager Munns to negotiate a contract for legal services with RWG Law.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
With the clarification that we'd like to have that come back to our December board meeting.
Good point.
Is that agreeable to you both?
Very agreeable, yes.
Okay. So can we have we don't need a roll call vote on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. You have direction then to negotiate with RWG.
I certainly do. Thank you.
As to provide legal services to the district. With that being said, then, do we have any closing board comments?
I do. I would like to thank all of the different firms that responded to our RFP. It was amazing to have that level of interest and support. And I think that, you know, is another indicator of how well this district's being managed and run. So
that's exactly what I was going to say, is that to get that kind of interest, they're not afraid to come work here.
Yep. And for everybody who traveled to interview, that was fantastic. Yeah. Thank you.
And everyone was a good candidate.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought that it's very interesting and a pat on the back to the district that we had so many people interested in representing us working with us. And we made it clear to everybody, and everybody made it clear to us that we'd be working as a team. And it wouldn't be, you know, legal and down this ladder. So I appreciate everybody that applied and the four that we interviewed and the one that we've asked Mr. Munns to negotiate with. So any other, I just wanted to bring up the Needs and Wishes fundraiser, December 14th. I'm going to repeat what Mr. Margotson said, but I'm not going to repeat it. I'm just referring back to it. So the Needs and Wishes after the parade on December 14th. It's always an awesome event. Always, always, always. So that being said, then we will adjourn the meeting.